Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is CSN's Capitals Faceoff.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into another edition of CSN's Capitals Faceoff podcast. I am your host, the Capitals correspondent, J.J. Regan. With me today, he is the Capitals insider. He is the goose to my Maverick. He is Tarik El-Bashir. Tarik?
Goose was way cooler anyway.
By the way,
Top Gun, that's a good pull. That's one of
you
the
like
best,
that one?
One of my favorite movies of
go.
All time.
Aren't they making a sequel? I think they're making a sequel.
I've heard that for years. It'd be great if they did. I'd be first in line.
Would you really want to see a sequel to that at this point?
Yes.
I guess you're right because they just made a sequel to Super Troopers, and I don't care how long it's taken. I'm going to watch that movie.
As longtime listeners of our pod know, I don't see movies. Like, literally the last movie I saw was like Zero Dark Thirty. Yeah.
As people know from our movie podcast where you sat there useless.
Yeah. I saw some Disney movies on a cruise this summer, but I literally don't see movies.
Okay. What we will be talking about today is how the roster competition has already changed. Barry Trotz's projected top six. And we will open up the mailbag. But first, let's give our thoughts to the ugly preseason opener. What was the final count? 20 penalties? Was that it? 20 combined penalties?
It was 20 combined, 10 per side, 3 total face-off violation penalties, 6 slashing penalties. And if that ever happens again, I'm going to cover the NBA.
Oh, because you get so many fewer stoppages in play in the NBA.
You don't get face-off. You don't get jump ball violations at that rate.
You don't get jump ball violations.
Oh, my God. That was hard to watch.
That is pretty rough.
That on top of the fact that 66% of the participants in that game, we're not going to hear from again until next year on either side. But, yeah, man, that was tough to watch. But, you know, as we said the other night, what happens is there are different rules that are emphasized every year, regardless of the sport. And the first few games, the referees are told to crack down. And it catches the coaches and the players and everyone off, and the fans at home watching on television, catches everyone off guard. Everyone, you know, gets mad. And then the referees dial it back. They make their point. The referees dial it back a little bit once you get into the regular season games. But that said, any player who gets tossed out of a faceoff like 3 or 4 times in the preseason, that's going to be in the back of his head, and that will accomplish what they're trying to accomplish, which is less cheating on the draws. And fewer slashes to the hands of star players.
Yeah.
So, look, we're not going to see that in the regular season. That was Toronto sending a message to the 31 teams.
Yes. There's no reason to panic. Clearly, we're not going to see that in the regular season. The one thing that I found interesting, everyone seemed pretty taken aback at it during the game. And you said, you were telling us during the broadcast that they usually have a video. The NHL usually goes around with videos of these things. And then when we talked to the players afterwards, and even the day after, they said they told us that it was going to be a little bit of an emphasis, but we didn't see anything.
They were supposed to get a bigger heads up.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened was I think the Capitals were like having their own meetings. Those ran long or something. And then they ended up only having a few minutes before they went to the ice to kind of discuss what was going to happen. But again, not a big deal. You're not going to see that in games that matter. It was a message that needed to be sent from the league office to the 31 teams and their players. And the outcome also, the league got what they wanted. What they did today at Kettler Capital's Iceplex is they went into the theater in the video room, and they went over what happened.
Right.
And they're like, all right, guys, here's the point of emphasis. Here's what the linesman didn't like. Here's why the referee threw you into the penalty box. Here's what you can and cannot do. And the comment that Barry Trotz made that I found very interesting is, look, rules change all the time. Interpretations change all the time. Players are very smart. They adapt. They'll figure a way around it. And then we'll come back to the need to enforce rules again in a different way. So, ugly, but not totally unexpected. And we might see a little bit more of it tonight, but in Montreal. But I don't expect this to be a big deal going forward.
So the NHL sent a message. You know who else needs to send a message? Our sponsors. Welcome back. In full disclosure, everyone, we are recording this podcast before the second game of the preseason. But in the first game, I think the roster competition has already changed significantly.
Significantly.
Tarik, whose stock rose and fell after game one and through training camp so far?
Well, I think Nathan Walker is the obvious answer to that question.
Mm-hmm.
Scoring the goal in New Jersey, the only goal the Capitals got, I think, was something that really was an eye-opener because of the way he made the play, by the way he crashed the net, by the way he got knocked down on the front end of that and still showed the fast hands to get that puck in, because he's not really known to be a natural goal scorer or a natural offensive guy. They hope there is a little bit more there that they can continue to develop. But Nathan Walker is a guy who came into camp with his name penciled in as the fourth line left wing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you can now write that in ink as fourth line left wing. His stock rose. You and I were talking during the game of the night. I thought Christian Juice was a little too passive. The skill is there. The skill is there. I just want to see him stop deferring to his teammates on the ice and to show me some of that offensive capability that he displayed in Hershey last year. I mean, he had 13 goals and 45 assists in 66 games last year. I didn't see a whole lot of that.
Right.
I saw a guy who looked like he was content dishing the puck to teammates and maybe was feeling the pressure a little bit. So I'd like to see a little more from him. I think he could be an NHL player, but he's got to show it.
Yeah. Walker, like you said, the obvious guy. I thought he was in a competition, and now I think he's taken a spot. I think it's his to lose at this point. Juice, his stock has certainly gone down. If he's going to make the roster, it's going to be as a playmaker. He had over 5 minutes of power play time, and he had virtually nothing to show for it. I think he had one shot on goal. You have to convince the coaches to give you a shot because of his size. And I'm sorry, his size puts him at a disadvantage. So he has to show the coach something, and he didn't show enough, and at times looked like he was getting pushed around by the New Jersey Devils. So not a good showing from him. And I thought he was – I had him penciled into my opening lineup. I don't have him there anymore. I think his stock dropped significantly. Chiasson is a guy who I notice a lot. Chiasson is a guy, he's not going to wow you, but he looked very dependable. He had one penalty on the night, but it was a goal-saving slash on Palmieri. I thought he played very well. I thought he looked like the exact kind of player that the Capitals were hoping to have as a 13th forward, and I think he took a big stride towards earning a roster spot and a contract.
I would agree with that. They liked him from the moment they signed him. They liked him in the first couple days of training camp. I think they like him even more now. They like his size. They like his compete. They like the fact that he can kill penalties. I think he's a guy who might actually be in the opening night lineup. I think he's going to make the roster, but I think he actually might play a decent amount.
Yeah. Interesting.
They've got to replace goals. They lost 48 just in two players, Justin Williams and Marcus Johansson. You're counting on Tom Wilson to add a few more. You're counting on Andre Burakovsky to add a few more. But you're going to need a guy like Alex Chiasson. He scored 12 goals for Calgary last year in 81 games, all at even strength, and only played like 13 minutes a night. Not quite as good as Brett Connolly, but that's pretty damn efficient. They're going to need him to come in and maybe chip in with double-digit goals again, because, like I said, they've got to replace those goals from somewhere, because they can't get better defensively It's not like they can start playing, you know, start clamping it down a little. They were the best defensive team in the league last year.
Mm-hmm.
They've got to somehow manufacture some goals, and Chaisson can do it. He can also score from right around the blue paint, and that's something that they don't, the Caps don't get enough of. So maybe he can bring some of that as well.
What are your thoughts on Chandler Stephenson? He's been a little bit. I thought he was underwhelming in the
penalty. Back to the bench, penalty.
Yeah.
That's all I heard.
He was underwhelming in the preseason opener.
I think he makes a team.
He's a guy who, okay, first of all, Tarik, you think everybody makes the team. You literally
Everyone makes the team.
Every person we bring up, you say, is going to make
all
the
of
team.
Them make
Not
the team.
Not everyone can make the team.
All of them. No, Chandler Stephenson, I think, is going to get every opportunity to earn a spot. I don't know how much he's going to play. But Barry Trotz made some interesting comments before the Montreal game. He said, I think he's got a very good chance of making the team, which, you know, Barry Trotz doesn't usually mince his words or
right.
doesn't usually send out, mixed messages. When he says something like that, you can kind of read between the lines. He's got a pretty good chance. He's got to clear waivers to go down. Drafted as a winger, played center, now playing wing, you know, sometimes up here, or at least last year he did, but he's been used as a center the last two games. He's the only player who has seen action in both of the first two preseason games. That's a little bit of a, okay, he's really competing for a spot here.
Yeah.
Maybe the extra. But in all seriousness, folks, you're absolutely right. Everyone cannot make the team. There is a roster limit of 23. Given their salary cap situation, if Jacob Vrana makes the team, it's going to be tight to even get 23. They might have to go with 22.
Right.
I've been told that they do have the flexibility to go 23. That said, Barry Trotz doesn't like keeping around extra players a lot.
Right. That is true.
So we'll see. I mean, you know, can Peluso and Stephenson and Chaisson and Walker, can they all – that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, right. There are still five of the six top six spots are taken – are spoken for. I mean, the next three are spoken for. So there's not many openings. There's three by my count, and probably six guys who have a legit shot right now of making a spot. So if there's three spots opening the lineup and there's six guys fighting for spots and you keep two extras and that's really five spots, then one guy gets the shaft and ends up either without a job or in Hershey.
Right.
So,
and the one thing to keep in mind, we're going to talk about the who makes the opening night lineup. It's going to be very fluid. You may not make the lineup on the first night, but you may be in there in the second night. It's going to be pretty much a revolving door, I expect. We saw that at times last season. They're going to have to get creative at times this season. And, I mean, there's a reason why they signed Devontae Smith-Pelly to a contract and brought in Chaisson for a PTO and have guys like Nathan Walker and Chandler Stephenson. There's just ultimately too many guys to have in the roster at one time, but that doesn't mean that they're not going to see significant time this season. It's going to be a revolving door, I would expect.
Totally. I can absolutely see the guys who make the opening night roster within 10, 15 games get swapped out for some guys who got sent down to Hershey.
Yeah.
If they aren't producing, if they aren't showing Trotz what he wants to see. I think there are some guys, Connor Hobbs, Jonas Siegenthaler. I keep saying Jonas. It's Jonas Siegenthaler. Maybe a Lucas Johansson. Some guys who aren't ready now, maybe won't be ready at the end of the preseason, but could be ready in January. You know, could be ready for a look-see in January, February. So maybe even earlier. So I think there are a number of players who are going to be gutted and disappointed for not making the opening night roster, but then when they get that call from Troy Mann, you know, during their post practice nap, telling them they're going to the show, they're going to be very happy. I think there are going to be a lot of Bears who are going to see time in Washington this year, because you know what? There's only one way to figure out who can do it and who can't.
Right.
And that is to now you can get some inklings from scrimmages. You can get a better inkling from watching a team go up against a half AHL, half NHL squad in the preseason.
Mm-hmm.
But NHL history is littered with guys who lit it up in the preseason and then got their walking papers on cutdown day.
Yes, that's
and,
very true.
And so I think there are some guys who, and you and I just talked about this on Facebook Live a moment ago, there are some guys who, even if you're not really in contention for one of the 23 spots, you're trying to establish a baseline for yourself. So when those injuries hit at some point, and they're going to hit at some point. Barry Trotz has that baseline of knowledge and feel for who should be the next guy to come up, not just based on how you're doing in Hershey, which has something to do with it, but also Barry wants to know, well, you know what? You know, Hobbs had a pretty good preseason too. So, you know, on top of the fact that he's lighting up the AHL, he also looked pretty good in those couple of preseason games. Let's give him a shot. Give him a shot to come up.
Let's move on to the top six. Tarik, I don't think Barry Trotz surprised us when he revealed that five of his top six were already taken. I think we already knew the names: Ovechkin, Backstrom, Burakovsky, Oshie, Kuznetsov. Five guys there. I think that was not a surprise. But I think he did answer one of the biggest questions of training camp of who would center Alex Ovechkin. Now we know it's going to be Evgeny Kuznetsov. We know from last year that Barry Trotz likes using pairs on his offensive lines and then switching out that third guy. Well, his pair on one line is going to be Ovechkin-Kuznetsov, and on the other line is going to be Backstrom-Oshie.
To start the season.
Now, that leaves an opening in the top six. Who's competing for that sixth spot?
Mm-hmm.
And where do you think this ultimately shakes out? We know Jacob Vrán is there.
Well, I've already ruled you out.
Oh, damn.
So, in all seriousness, I've got Vrana. I've got Brett Connolly. I've got outside possibilities. Tom Wilson, Alex Chiasson, and maybe some of the Bears.
Alex Chiasson.
It'd be a huge jump. Like I said, I think my number one and my number two are Vrana 1,
mm-hmm.
Connolly 2,
mm-hmm.
long pause,
yeah.
Alex Chiasson.
You put him over Tom Wilson?
Yes.
Really?
I look, Tom Wilson, and not because I think he's better than Tom Wilson,
right.
just
Understood.
Because of the role. Yes. I think Tom Wilson is better suited to a third line role, and I think the Caps do too.
Mm-hmm.
I could see Brett Connolly sneaking in there if young Jake drops the ball or the puck.
Yeah, I think Connolly would be the guy there. The other thing to keep in mind, there, you know, a lot of this may seem set in stone, but Burakovsky and Vrana and Connolly can both play both sides, can play left and right wing. So there is mm-hmm. still some shuffling that can go on here.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, Jacob Vrana, what an opportunity he had. Does anyone have more riding on this camp than Jacob Vrana? He can go from the top six of the Washington Capitals all the way to the AHL. He may not make the roster.
Yeah, it's a make-or-break situation for him, and it's terrible to say that about a 21-year-old who was just drafted. But when you're drafted first overall and you're drafted high, I mean, first round,
right?
There are expectations, you know, like it or not, mm-hmm. and the expectation is that when the team is ready for you, you better have done your homework, and you better be ready to step in.
Right.
They were ready for him last year, and he looked like he'd studied up a little bit and, you know, was a guy they want to keep their eye on, obviously, and could have high hopes for, even if there were some question marks based on his uneven season in Hershey.
Mm-hmm.
But now the team that drafted you high in the first round three years ago is ready for you, and you better be ready. And I'm not sure he's going to get a better opportunity he's going to have right now. And you just hope he doesn't waste it.
For sure. Tarik, I've been outspoken in my prediction for Jacob Vrana this year that if he does not make the team, he will start it. He will start the season somewhere else. Do you think Hershey is still an option for that? This organization still believes that Hershey is an option for Vrana given what happened last season?
What would the other option be?
Trade.
Oh, that's a great question. I would say yes, because at the same time, if you're the Capitals, you're not just going to make a trade for trade's sake. I mean, you're going to make the right deal when it's available. Now,
yes.
If that deal is in Brian McClellan's back pocket right now,
mm-hmm.
and he doesn't make the opening night roster, sure, it could happen quickly, but I wouldn't expect them to go, well, crap, he didn't make the 23. Let's help the kid out and just trade him to whoever for it.
Oh,
they're not doing that.
No. I don't think it would be that. I think it would be
– they're going to do what's in the best interest of the team, which is continuing to develop him, or if there is a deal out there that could bring back a defenseman.
That's where I was looking. I don't see this as, well, we got to do the kid a favor. No. Yeah, this is a business. Nobody does anybody favors in professional sports, or very rarely. You have to do what's best for the team. So I'm not sitting there saying, well, it's just not working out here for Jacob Rana, so let's cut the kid a break. No. I'm saying, would he be able to focus in Hershey enough that he doesn't hurt his trade value? Because if it is what it was last year, that's not going to help him any.
Well, I'll tell you this, man. I would say, based on what I have heard and what I have seen and the situation the team is facing and the situation the player is in, I think he starts here. I think he starts here. If he is not very good in the preseason and he hasn't played a game yet,
yes.
You know, like you said, we're recording this before the Montreal game. Even if he has a suboptimal preseason, I think he still gets NHL time right off the bat. They've got to find out what he is. And there's only one way to do it.
Yep. I agree with that. I think a lot of people are wringing their hands about Verana. I think he makes the team. I think it's clear the skill is there. And I think the more time you give him and the more opportunities you give him, the more he'll thrive. I think last year was a concern what happened with Hershey, but I think people have been taking that and running. I think he's got a solid future in Washington still.
As long as they use him right, and yes. By using him right, he's not a third or fourth line
guy.
He's got to play with either Backstrom or Cousy. He's got to play with guys who can play with some pace and can get him pucks in areas where he can snap, snag it and make a quick shot, because that's what he's got, man. He's got wheels and he's got a quick release and a heavy shot. And if he's not using those things, he's not going to help you very much.
Right. That said, if I recall, I believe Barry Trotz was using Kuznetsov on the fourth line a little bit when he was getting. Adjusting to the NHL roster, but that may have been more of a
different players, positions.
And that may have been more of a we're not going to send you to Hershey, and you need to adjust to the North American ice. So we're going to put you on the fourth line. But you're absolutely right; he needs to be a top six player to really thrive and show what he has, because he just doesn't fit the role of the bottom six at all.
He also doesn't like it. it's not part of his makeup.
No, but I don't like you that much, but I still do these podcasts.
But I'm a top six forward. So what are we talking about?
Let's go ahead and open up the mailbag. Got some questions here from you guys. Greg Christian.
What's up, Greg?
Ooh, Greg has three questions. Greg,
don't get greedy, Greg.
I know, right? Says, including the players that have to clear waivers and to be returned to Hershey, the Caps have 11 forwards and 7 D-men on the roster. They also have Rana, Barber, and Bowie as top prospects. Even if neither of the PTO players make the team, it seems highly likely to me that the Caps are going to have to expose at least one player and probably more to waivers. Do you agree? And if so, who do you think it will be?
Yeah, so some guys are going to get exposed to waivers.
Yes, they
Every team is going to have to expose prospects they think are going to get stolen on waivers
yep.
to the wire. And you know what? They aren't going to get taken. Because I would say there's a better chance of the Capitals taking someone else's waiver wire player when rosters are due than it is one of their prospects getting taken by another player, by another team. And that's not a knock on the talent level of the Capitals prospects. I just think that as you're seeing with all these guys on PTOs right now, there are young players who are coming into the league and they're playing right away, and that's kind of putting a squeeze on the middle class a little bit. And I think I think that when the Capitals see that waiver wire, when teams are cutting down to 23, I think they're going to go, this D-man's better than someone on that we may know. Or this forward might work out better than someone we may know. And I would not be one bit surprised if they go shopping on that waiver wire and end up bringing someone in. It's happened before. I remember Chris Bork being told he made the team only to get squeezed out. I could see that happening again. Not saying it will happen, but I would say keep your eye out, keep your eyes peeled for that.
Looking at the defense, either Aaron Ness or Christian Jews is going to get exposed.
That is correct.
One of them is going to get exposed, and it may well be Christian Jews. I know they would hate to do that, but they may say, "Look, people are going to look at that size and say no thanks," and hope that ends up landing him in Hershey.
Well, look, the hard, cold reality of Christian Jews' situation and Aaron Ness' situation, and probably the rest of the other players who are vying for spots, is this. If you can't make the roster of a team that has clear openings in their lineup,
yes,
maybe the bottom two or three teams go, "Wow, they're better than what we got." But most teams are going to look at that and go, "Huh, all right, you got beat out by a PTO guy. Right. We'll pass."
If Colorado passes on either Aaron Ness or Christian Jews, despite having, I don't know if they have a defenseman on their roster, they're so bad, they're fools. Bottom line. Throwing it out there.
You talking about Colorado?
Yes.
No, I can't worry about Colorado. I got Capitals problems to deal with, man.
I know
Matt Duchene, Sean, should not go in front of the media again.
Yeah. They should stop trotting him out there. That's for sure. All right, question two. Hardly anybody seems to be talking about Chorney being anything other than a number 7 D-man, but with this being a
I disagree.
Contract expiration year, I think he's going to be motivated to earn a contract for next year.
And I agree.
Can see him being Carlson's partner.
I disagree. So I disagreed, agreed, and disagreed. So I do think that there is a chance that Taylor Chorney is on the opening night roster. I think there's a decent chance of that. I think he's a 30-year-old veteran who's played a lot of games in this league. Played 55 for the Capitals a couple years ago. They have some trust in him. He played pretty good in small doses last year. There was a reason he was the number 7 last year. When I think of Taylor Chorney's body of work, I think of the fact that he plays very well with Brooks Orpik.
Mm-hmm.
And if one of the youngsters is on the verge of being ready but not quite ready, I could see Taylor Chorney starting the season, playing the first month, while the other player, let's say it's Madison Bowie, practices and gets in a game here and there,
right,
and kind of gets up to NHL speed. And then in December, Madison Bowie becomes Brooks Orpik's partner going forward. I could very easily see a situation like that where Chorney is kind of a placeholder. And that's not a knock on Chorney. I mean, there's great players, there's good players, and there's guys who are hanging on. And
he's
somewhere between hanging on and being a good player. I mean, he's still one of the best 750 players in the world.
So. Being the number 7 defenseman on an NHL team means you are one of the best players in the world. Yeah. So that's not a knock on him whatsoever.
Nope. And I think he is going to be rightfully motivated by the fact that he's, 29 or 30 years old, and he's probably got one more good contract in him, maybe two. And here's a chance to make sure the next three generations of Chorneys don't have to work. I mean, he's sufficiently motivated. Not to mention, he wants to win. He wants to be in the spotlight. He wants to have a sweater every night.
Absolutely. I think he will see more playing time than he saw last year for sure. And there's nothing wrong with being a placeholder and helping out the young guys a little bit. However, if you come into the season with a guy who has been a stat, Taylor Chorney is a number 7 defenseman. And as you said, that's not a knock on Taylor Chorney. That's who he is. If you come in and he is suddenly in your top 4 mm-hmm. or your top 6, that doesn't speak well of what you have on your defense.
It does not.
And I mean, and no disrespect to Taylor Chorney, that's just
Is there a scenario out there where he opens up as the number 4 next to John Carlson? I'm not going to completely rule that out and say that's crazy talk.
But as a placeholder.
Right, right. I still think that I could see him being the number 6 with Brooks Orpik. And holding place until Madison Bowie, who's a right shot, is ready to come in and take that spot for full time.
And let's not forget, sometimes the opening night roster can be a reward for what you saw in training camp. Maybe Barry Trotz throws him in because of how he handled last season, and he plays well in training camp,
mm-hmm.
and maybe the prospects aren't ready yet. I could see that, but the long-term projection for this team can't have Taylor Chorney in the top 4. And his final question, Do you think retiring Phil Chenier's jersey strengthens the argument for retiring Peter Bonja's? Why or why not? I don't think it has any bearing.
I don't know. I mean, like I said, the Capitals have already opened Pandora's box by retiring a bunch of jerseys, you know, and having only one Stanley Cup appearance. I think there should be kind of a correlation there. If there are two guys out there, and we've talked about this a lot, it would be Peter Bondra and Ole Kolzig should be the next two to get their numbers retired.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least have their jerseys raced. I'd be okay with either one of them based on the production they had during their career and what they meant to this franchise.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. In my old age, I've kind of softened a little bit on the whole, they didn't win a Stanley Cup. They can't have seven guys.
Right.
In the,
yeah,
you know what? Whatever,
that's
man.
That's an impossible standard yeah. that you shouldn't hold to. I just wouldn't.
I saw Peter Bondra today, too, by the way. He walked past me. That dude could still play, like, on the third line.
Yes, he could.
Like, he was wearing, like, this really nice polo. His arms were kind of jacked. I mean, he literally looked like a guy who's about to get on the plane with his NHL teammates to go play a game. Unbelievable kind of shape he's in.
Moving on to Mary Smith. I'm sure you are getting tons of questions about this, but I want to ask you about your thoughts on the increased enforcement of the faceoff violation penalty.
I do not know what you're talking about.
I was at the game versus the Devils. Oh, you poor soul. Why? Why?
You were one of the 18?
Why were you there?
Holy crap, that building was empty.
That first period was some of the worst hockey I've ever seen, even by the Devils' standards. Ooh, maybe throwing some shade there.
Ouch.
All the whistles.
Wait, are you a Devils fan or a Cats fan? That's the next question.
All the whistles slowed the game to a complete crawl. It was not fun for the fans. I'm sure it wasn't fun for the players. I know as the season goes on, guys will get used to it, but it seems like the NHL is trying to fix a problem nobody is complaining about. Thoughts?
Well, I think there have not been very public or vociferous complaints about the face-off rule, although I have heard players grumbling quietly behind closed doors about certain guys and certain tactics and the face-off.
You mean like when they came out and called Sidney Crosby a cheater?
Yes, yes. So that was a public one. But you hear it more behind the scenes when you're talking to a guy who just lost, you know, 70% of his draws for the night, you know, and they're looking at the score sheet and they're going, man, I didn't get a fair shake out there. You know, I would say I can see where you're coming from. I do think that maybe they are trying to fix a problem that isn't, in the public eyes, a problem. The slashing is becoming a problem, I think. Anytime you are out there whacking at the hands of players, especially star players, risking injury, that's a problem. And I think there was a rise in it last year or in recent years, and the league decided to make that a point of emphasis and crack down on trailing forwards, especially trailing players, you know, on the back check, using their stick as kind of like a machete. You know who I noticed does that a lot? Alex Chiasson. Yeah. Watch him backtrack an opposing player. He really uses that stick. And now if you break the opponent's stick or you whack him on the hand, you don't have to break anything. You're definitely getting a 2-minute foul. And you know what? I'm okay with that.
I'm okay, absolutely, with the slashing. You saw it all the time, and players don't have much padding on those gloves. Those gloves look big and thick, but there's not a whole lot of padding there. If it's against the rules, it's against the rules, and you see people all the time get whacked for it. And then, you know, poor Mark Mathot had his finger chopped off by Sidney Crosby last year. And it's not a knock on Crosby. Crosby's doing what everyone in the NHL does. So I'm fine with them cracking down on it. The face-offs is absurd. That was ridiculous. And I know that's not what's going to look like in the regular season. But I was already annoyed last year
What does it annoy you?
Last year, I saw way too many linesmen throw people out of the dot, and that slows the game down. And I saw the explanation. We had a great video on the broadcast of the explanation of what's going on and why. Okay, so there's more room between the two players that it'll reduce scrums in the faceoff circle and get the puck out faster, and the play will be able to resume faster. That's fine. But they're not taking into account how much it slows the game down every time you kick somebody out of the faceoff circle. I think you're not fixing the problem. You're making it worse by having more people kicked out of the faceoff circle. But the one thing I will say is that I talked to Jay Beagle about this, And I was surprised. He said it can't look like it looked like on Monday because that slows the game down way too much. But he wasn't totally against all the emphasis because as a guy who takes a lot of defensive zone draws, he says a lot of those offensive guys, they don't wait for their stick to get down. They just wait for the defensive player to put his stick down. That puts him at a disadvantage. And so he's not totally against all the emphasis, which I thought was interesting from someone who is probably the most important faceoff player on the team.
I also found it interesting that Jay Beagle didn't watch that game.
Yes. Jay Beagle.
He must have been out like big buck hunting or something.
We asked about it, and he said, well, I didn't watch it. The first thing he said was he didn't watch the game. So that.
But you know what? If I'm a 10-year pro and there's a preseason game going on, I'm probably spending time with my wife and family too.
Sure.
Catch you up in the morning. Who looked good and who didn't?
And about 2 minutes into that game, I wish I wasn't watching that game either. All right, let's move on to our third email. I've been sitting here laughing reading this email.
Okay.
Dear esteemed brother Zorana Mino, warm greetings. Congratulations. Your registration for the All Partners Online Conference with Pastor Chris, which is scheduled to hold on the 22nd of September, is complete. The time for the conference is 6 to 8. The conference will be streamed live on the Love World Partners Forum website. Kindly find below your login details. Thank you. Rhapsody of Realities 1.
Did you log in? I would have to log in at this point.
I did not log in, but clearly some signals got crossed on that one.
Capitals face off, and we got an email from
Pastor Chris,
an aggressive churchgoer. That's pretty funny.
Moving on to our last question. This is from Bill Bridges. Hi, guys. Thanks for the weekly podcast. Thanks for taking my question. I see where the NHL is looking to free up offense to score more goals. The focus on reducing slashing is a good start, but if they really want more goals, how about stopping all the shot blocking by the forwards? It's almost impossible these days to get shots from the point on goal. My fix would be to make it a penalty if a skater goes to the ice to block a shot anywhere outside a 10-foot semicircle around the goal. If they want to stand and block shots, fine, but no more sliding lengthwise when the offensive player has the puck. You'd see more pucks getting to the goalie, and if there's a save, more rebounds. I guarantee you, you'll see a big jump in scoring. That is an interesting idea.
I like that. I don't feel like I see guys going to the ice as much as maybe before. What I see is I see players who are more well-versed, coached better than they were in the past in terms of where to place their sticks, where to attack a player who's at the point who's about to unleash a shot. I remember the days of when a winger would go out to the point and make a half-hearted attempt to, hey coach, I'm going out to play some defense, and then when that shot still got through. Now, when a winger goes out to play the point, he's going out there to block the shot. And, you know, it's the combination, I think, of better equipment on your shin pads and your pants, where you're not necessarily afraid of getting stung as much, even though your skates probably provide less protection than they did back in the day when they were real leather, now that they're all that composite stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But guys are going out there with intention to block shots. I know he made the point of forwards blocking them within 10 feet, I guess, of the crease. Yeah, I mean, it's a good rule on paper, but in practice, I think it'd be pretty hard to enforce. I think it's like, you know, you hear people occasionally, you know, back when the left wing lock and the neutral zone trap and things like that were, being played by a lot of teams. You know, people said, well, why don't we make an illegal defense where you can't have a certain number of players in the neutral zone?
Mm.
I don't know if adding more rules to the rule book is the way to go to increase offense. And I'm not sure that guys laying out to block shots, particularly in the regular season, is the problem. I just think guys are coached better. They just know how – they have better stick detail. That's the word that Barry Trotz used. They just know how to be in the lanes better. And not just the forwards. I mean, I wish you could take a lot of times when you, especially when you're watching scrimmages, or sometimes I get to watch the Capitals from ice level, and you watch a D-man take his little half cock. He's cocking a stick, getting ready to take a shot from the point. And if you're in the corner and you're looking straight, there is a winger, there is a center, and there is a D-man between the defenseman, the offensive defenseman taking the shot, and the goaltender. I mean, he's got to get it through three sets of legs and skates.
Right.
And that's, none of those guys went down to the ice. You just now have teams that are playing better defense in their own zone and coach and players that are just coached better as to where to be to mitigate those shots. It's a great point. I mean, the league was a whole lot more fun when the scores were 6-5, 6-4 every night. But you know what? There's parity now. There's better coaching. There's better preparation.
Better goalies.
Oh, my God. I mean, I've said this 100 times. Has any position in pro sports changed more than ice hockey goalie?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so. I mean, you go back and you watch Wayne Gretzky, not taking anything away from Gretzky, but early in his career when he snapped those shots past the goalies barely moved.
Right.
They were, oh, darn, the puck went through my legs again. You know, now they're going, you know, these are 6'7" behemoths, you know, with all this equipment going down into the butterfly. I know we're totally going off on tangent here. You know, not only stopping the shot, but steering it perfectly to the corner where the D-man can easily control it and turn it the other way 100 miles an hour, right? It's just, it's a different game than it was back then. And, yeah, goaltenders.
Yeah.
They're a lot better than they used to be.
I don't hate the rule as much as I thought I would as soon as I read it. And you can see how the NHL would couch this. We're going to reduce injuries. You know, you show a video of that time where Tom Wilson took that puck off the face because he was sliding and he slid right into the path of the shot. So they could say we're reducing injuries. You can't slide to stop the puck. But really, I don't think that's what the problem is, ultimately. I think you explained it pretty well that people are in better position. They're coached better. And there's also, there are a lot of players who their bread and butter is blocking the shots. Not as much as in past years. And there are a lot of people who would say, well, the importance of blocking shots is way overemphasized. But that's not, I mean, if you're willing to write the paycheck and give players contracts because they're a good shot blocker, like Chris Russell or maybe Carl Alsner.
Or 106.7 The Fan?
I mean, that's up to the team. If they still value shot blocking, then that's up to them. Would Quentin Lang have ever made the NHL ever if shot blocking were illegal?
Quentin Lang was my favorite.
Wasn't he just
the
best?
He was the best. He had two teeth.
Yep.
And played harder. He did more with what God gave him than any hockey player I have ever covered at this level. I loved Quentin Lang. Did he had a busted spleen at some point, didn't he?
Yes, he ruptured his spleen.
Oh my God.
He was so fun. I enjoyed him a lot, and you put this rule in place, he never would have come close to sniffing the NHL because that's just what he did.
Given where the Capitals were in their history, he may not. If he had been in another organization, he might not have had a shot. But man, I'm glad he did, and I'm sure he's glad he did too.
He was fun.
I had a lot of fun covering that game.
He was fun. If you want to have your questions read and answered on the next pod, send your question to capitalsfaceoff@gmail.com. If you like the podcast, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher, and anywhere podcasts are available. And be sure to give us a good rating and review. It really does help spread the word about the show. Tarek, we are inching our way closer to the regular season. There's still some more preseason to go, but we're getting closer.
I'm excited about it. I think I told you. There came a time about 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, I was laying on the beach. And my leg was twitching. I was just like, this is my second trip down there. I got to get back to work. Like, hockey's calling, work's calling. Like, it's time to get this started. I'll be honest, preseason for me has always been kind of hard to slog through.
Yes.
Especially the past couple of years because of all the, you know, there weren't many question marks. But this has actually been pretty fun to kind of track who's, you know, the prospects, where they are. You know, the every day you're getting an update from Barry Trotz as to who looked good and who's maybe jockeying for the, you know where the guys are in that race. But yeah, it's
more intrigue than usual.
Way more intrigue, but I'm still ready for October 5th.
Time for October.
Yeah.
Guys, thanks for tuning in. As always, for Tarek El-Bashir, I'm JJ Regan. Let's get the puck out of here.